Radio.
Hello and welcome to CryptoCurrent, the only podcast to bring you beginner and advanced knowledge of cryptocurrency and blockchain, analyses of cryptocurrency markets, and discussions on growing a business within the crypto space. Stay tuned and stay CryptoCurrent.
All right, and welcome to another episode of CryptoCurrent. Richard and Adam here, and we have a special guest with us today. We have Jacob Pouncey. Thank you for joining us today.
Yeah, thank you guys for having me.
No problem. So, Jacob, do you mind telling us a little bit about yourself? Can you give us a little background?
Yeah, so my background is in finance, and now I'm studying in Copenhagen, Management of Innovation and Business Development. But before that, I worked at a small boutique, sort of a nonprofit, where we invested in early stage ideas, and we invested in for-profit and nonprofit ventures. And that's sort of where I'm coming from. But I mean, the main question is sort of where I came into cryptocurrency, and that was in my undergrad at Tulane University. I know you guys are Tulane alums as well, so that's nice.
Yep, yep.
But roll wave.
Always.
Yeah, of course. Essentially, I was a freshman in college studying finance, and I came across Bitcoin for the second time. And I said, I really dove into it, and I said, this is going to disrupt the profession that I want to get into. And then I was like, okay, I need to study this and learn everything I can. And that was around the time the Mt. Gox bubble happened, which was one of the largest bubbles at the time. And then I thought that I had missed my opportunity to get into the space and sort of invest and, you know, learn about it. It was the longest bear market in crypto history.
Yeah.
And basically since then, I just started reading like white papers, listening to podcasts such as Andreas Antonopoulos, reading books, and really just trying to educate myself in the space as much as possible. Because I saw that even though the price was declining, you saw that a lot of companies and businesses, companies and like miners, were adding more, were building out infrastructure for it. And I was like, okay, these guys really see something in it. So maybe there's something to this. And that's really when I got hooked.
Right. So something didn't add up. Right. And so just for everybody that doesn't know, Jacob, you're at Saxo Bank now. Is that correct?
Yeah. So I started with Saxo.
Yeah. Sorry. Yeah, what is Saxo Bank? Just so everybody's familiar. And what's your role at the bank?
Yeah. So Saxo Bank is a broker. Basically, we are a broker dealer that facilitates basically, the goal of Saxo Bank is to democratize trading. So we have a trading platform that most people can download. We don't have U.S. clients, but globally. So clients can download the Saxo Trader Pro, open accounts, deposit money with us, and instantly be able to trade most global markets, anywhere from the Dow Jones to the Hong Kong index to the Dubai index. We have thousands of clients globally that are able to trade and get exposure to any sort of equities, commodities, or fixed income.
It's awesome. So, quick question on that: how did you even like get into that? Like, you were here in New Orleans, and you get this opportunity to go to Copenhagen. Like, walk us through that.
Yeah. So originally, I was working at my old job. Sorry, and I wanted to get a master's degree, so I sort of met this girl who is Danish, and I was like, okay, let me just fly over there and see what it's like. So I applied to some jobs here, and nothing worked out because you sort of need a master's degree to get any sort of job as a foreigner, because they're not going to hire for low-skilled jobs. They're not going to hire a foreigner when they can hire someone in the Danish market.
Right.
It's very hard to get a visa for someone for a foreigner, for, you know, an unskilled job or, you know, not a knowledge worker per se. So I applied to Copenhagen Business School and I got in, and I moved here in the last summer. And last summer I was sort of, you know, trying to see what sort of blockchain scene was like here. And I stumbled upon this group called the Nordic Blockchain Association. And in this group, I was a member for a while. And then this lady posted a job opportunity at Saxo Bank as a student worker in the quantitative strategy teams as a cryptocurrency analyst. And I knew this was right up my alley. One, I was a student at the time. I still am currently. And I was deep into crypto. And so I was like, this is my chance. So I applied and then ended up doing two rounds of interviews. One of them was in like a very rowdy internet cafe in Sri Lanka. And then the follow-up interview was in Copenhagen. But that's another story. So then I started in October. And I mean, basically what I do there is sort of inform the bank and its clients on this emerging asset class. So I'm telling the bank what we need to look out for, what's on the horizon, what is it exactly? And then I'm also telling clients, you know, explain them what it is, the very basic general concepts, and then sort of what the outlook is like and what it means, what cryptocurrency means in the scope of your whole portfolio.
So if you have to quantify, Jacob, amongst your clients, would you say there is a general interest in cryptocurrency? In being involved with?
I would say we definitely have clients who trade crypto, not as much as we had during the peak of, you know, the early peaks. And also every day I'm sitting at my desk and I'm overhearing, you know, the sales traders or the onboarding guys talking to clients about cryptocurrency. So there's definitely, you know, people are definitely interested in the space. And it really is like a retail investor sort of asset right now.
Right. Well, and so as a cryptocurrency analyst at a global brokerage, when you say you have to analyze cryptocurrencies to tell Saxo Bank what to look out for, what do you exactly mean by that? So what are you taking to Saxo Bank? What type of information are you providing to them about cryptocurrency?
Yeah, so I'm following general market trends, what's happening on the regulatory front, as well as what's happening in the market itself. So trading volumes, exchanges. So really, I mean, your job is just to keep the tab on the market. It's just like any other analyst who is following equities or commodities or FX. You sort of need to just have a total scope, total picture of the market and everything that sort of affects the market. So the tertiary, inputs to the market.
Got you. So with all the research that you've been doing, I mean, there's got to be a lot of crypto projects that you've been doing some research on. Which one has you the most excited currently?
Yeah. I hope there's not a lot of, you know, Ethereum lovers on this channel, because I'm going to mention EOS. And the reason why I'm mentioning, why this has me excited, because EOS, there's this trilemma in cryptocurrencies that people sort of like to bring up, where it's you can only solve two of these three, and that's privacy, scalability, and decentralization, right? If you can solve for two at a time, but you can't find the Holy Trinity, and that's that's why crypto is so funny. So you can have a private coin and it can be very scalable, but it's not going to be decentralized, meaning that there's going to be one central server or, you know, two central servers running all the transactions. Or you can have sort of a private coin that's decentralized, but only has, you know, seven transactions per second, like Bitcoin, which isn't really that private, but you get the picture.
Right.
And with EOS is one of the first coins that is sort of trading decentralization in the hopes of getting scalability, which it already has. It's breaking about 2,800 transactions per second, which is light years ahead of Ethereum and Bitcoin, especially. So that's exciting. We're already seeing the scalability happen. The decentralization aspect of EOS is interesting. There's only 21 block producers, as opposed to Bitcoin, which has, you know, thousands of block producers, thousands of people running the software to you know, to find the next block, half second block times. And also what they do is like, you're not with Bitcoin, you're just holding an entry in the ledger. With Ethereum, you are buying rights to computations on the Ethereum network. So each Ether has, you know, so many computations, potential computations worth of gas in it, right? Because gas is Ether, but just smaller denominations. And then with EOS, the EOS token itself is a share of network resources. So with it, you can buy RAM, you can buy space, and things like that. So that's one of the interesting aspects. And then the economic aspects of EOS is that the tokens are burned. So it's deflationary in the sense that when you use a token, when you build a dApp, you have to stake EOS tokens in order for that dApp to continue running. And also tokens are burned when you use it on network resources. So that's interesting. And then, it also inflates at 1% a year. So it inflates at 1% a year, but the rate of usage in the network is more than the rate of inflation. So the amount of tokens burned are actually more than what is being released into the network. So it's actually deflationary by nature.
Well, let's talk about decentralization for a second with EOS, because EOS, I think, is certainly an appealing project. I mean, it's the largest ICO to date. Just their year-round ICO just capped last month with $4 billion in donations capped. Now, the controversial aspect of EOS, for me at least, is yes, we can say it's decentralized, but with those 21 block producers, and we've actually seen this several times, even within the first 14 days of EOS mainnet going live, it's like, the block producers like Brock Pierce and Jeremy Larimer and everyone on those block producing teams, there have been several times where EOS accounts have been unanimously shut down and transactions have been halted just because of a vote that was conducted among the block producers. And to me, I mean, that's something that raises a red flag as far as an argument in advocation of decentralization. Do you have a comment on that?
Yeah, exactly. Yes, I mean, that does raise the red flag, but I mean, you can see that, I mean, if you looked at the DAO hack of 2016, when Ethereum, when there was the largest hack in Ethereum's history, basically the DAO was a decentralized organization that had a bug, or not a bug, but a feature in its smart contract that allowed the person to withdraw funds into his own smaller DAO. And the Ethereum network decided to hard fork.
Right.
And actually, you know, resend those funds. And they did it in a vote system, but it wasn't one person, one vote. It was, you know, the amount of Ether that you had. So obviously there's larger whales at play and people who had financial interest in the DAO who rolled it back. So the immutability nature of a blockchain is not it's not protected even in like a more decentralized network like Ethereum. You also see that, you know, when Vitalik was sort of, when someone ran a fake article saying that he was deceased, the Ethereum network lost billions in market cap. And does that really show a network that is truly decentralized? You know, not so much. But not just commenting directly on EOS. Yes, it is sort of centralized, and you have 21 parties that sort of have control over the network. But there's also, you know, 150 other block producers who are waiting in line to take their spot. So as a token holder, I can vote out a block producer that I don't like. So if they start to behave poorly, I can vote them out. If we get enough around it, we can vote out a block producer who's misbehaving. But I mean, when you sign up for EOS, you're signing up for the ability to, you know, protect yourself from stolen funds, because it is a little bit not as decentralized as Bitcoin. And you also sort of sign up for the fact that if you, I mean, that's it. So it is.
So you would argue that the trade off for signing up with EOS, right, to support EOS, you would say that the trade off is more insurance for a little less decentralization. Is that correct?
Yes, exactly. So you really have to question yourself, how much does decentralization matter to you? And do you think that the cost of centralization will harm you monetarily? Then, you know, that's sort of what you have to think about when signing up, when using the EOS. But I mean, they're still trying to figure that out. You know, Dan Larimer has written several good posts about on-chain governance, and they've actually scaled back some of the abilities or privileges of blockchain, of the block producers, saying that it's sort of the intent of code and, you know, all these different aspects. So it's not perfect, but they're working it out. And that's right. What excites me about it is that people are still buying into the project, even though they have all these hiccups at launch. So it's showing that there's really a lot of buy-in. And once they get past this, I mean, Ethereum didn't launch it, you know, incredibly smoothly. Neither did Bitcoin. I mean, there was a bug where someone could print, you know, billions of Bitcoin very early on. But it's because that all these projects are launching with so many eyes on them that as soon as you make one misstep, it's like, you know, everyone thinks it spells catastrophe.
It's hard.
What we have to understand is that this is all technology and protocols, right?
Right, right.
You can upgrade it. You can roll it back. You can, you know, you can fix it.
Right. Well, that actually brings us into kind of shifting gears into another direction of where do you see cryptocurrency being in like the next 5 years? Do you think it's going to compete within the tech industry as far as like the market cap, or like what do you think the global impact will be? Where do you see it going?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it will compete with the tech industry. I mean, it is a technology, so it is part of the tech industry. You can't really separate the two. But if we did, say, the traditional FANG tech companies, you know, Facebook, Amazon, Apple, Netflix, Google, so et cetera, and then versus, you know, the Bitcoins and, you know, the Ethereums of the world, I think they will definitely rival each other. I think the market cap will be, you know, several times where it is now. But in 5 years, most of the coins that we know of today won't be around. Like Denta coin or, you know, all these other coins, a lot of them won't be around. And also a lot of the ones that are, you know, in number 500 mark, like, you know, rank 500 in terms of market cap, rank 800, you know, things like that, those might creep up. And, you know, these guys are building working products. And then eventually it takes some time to build a working product and to build a use case in cryptocurrency. Just look at Augur, which launched, I think a week ago, which took 3 years to launch. It was one of the first ICOs, and now it launched with, you know, basically no hiccups, and it's already transacting, you know, millions of dollars of Ether. So that's what we have to, you know, keep in mind. And I also see Bitcoin. Bitcoin finally upgrades its block size, maybe. You know, that's a Bitcoin Core. I think it will upgrade its block size, and I think it will be sort of more dominant. And maybe you might have some actual, you know, dApps running on top of the Bitcoin network. And, you know, whether that's on like the Lightning Network or through maybe some layer two software upgrades such as sharding. That would be interesting. I don't know if Bitcoin will ever do that, but depending on how it works with Zequia and Ethereum, it could implement it. But yeah, that's sort of where I see it. That's where I see it in 5 years, and it's definitely going to compete with the tech industry. You'll see a lot of publicly listed companies. Bitmain is looking to IPO. Knan is looking to IPO. Coinbase will IPO. So you'll see a lot of these companies IPO, and you'll start to see a lot of exchanges trade crypto assets themselves. And you'll see also a lot of exchanges become, a lot of crypto exchanges become banks. So the line between crypto, traditional markets will start to get very blurry.
Start to merge.
You'll have traditional companies going into crypto and crypto going companies going into traditional markets.
So hypothetically, in let's say in 5 years, right? And when we say compete with the tech industry, I mean, we can just take Apple stock today, right? We're talking about one company, one stock. The Apple stock's market capitalization is over four times. Well, actually not today. Over three times the entire cryptocurrency market cap in general. And so when we ask, will it compete with these popular tech market capitalizations? I think what we're saying is, you know, will certain cryptocurrencies be able to thrive and exist in a way that is both widespread adopted, is competitive with everyday brand name companies? And will it be something, will some of these companies be able to be or have the same sort of impact that companies like Apple and Facebook and Airbnb are having today, right? And so just for fun, let's say in 5 years we have this thriving cryptocurrency market, right? We have some companies that have gone IPOs. We have some mainstream adoption. If you had to name maybe out of the top five cryptocurrencies, hypothetically, in 5 years, will these be cryptocurrencies that are around today, right? Will they be cryptocurrencies that are popular today? Or do you think like the next cryptocurrency, the next Airbnb and Facebook of crypto, is that something that exists already? Or is that something that is yet to be created yet?
That's a good question. I would say half and half, right? Is where I'm at. I would say that yes, some of the most dominant ones will be the ones that we have seen today. The ones that we are seeing today will be the most dominant ones. And then also, we might have some newcomers because you have to look at this technology as a platform technology. And in platforms, there's a lot of first mover advantage. There's a lot of first mover advantages. When you reach critical mass as a network, it's very hard for people to switch over. And you see that with a lot of platform tech. It's really hard for people to transition to something else. I mean, MySpace was the dominant player. And then, you know, Facebook took it over, right? But now, you know, what's after Facebook? I mean, there is no social media website that will be the new Facebook doing the same thing as Facebook. And a lot of people complain about Facebook, but yet, you know, it's hard for people to really delete it because it's like, okay, if you want to coordinate with someone, you know, Facebook is usually the easiest way to do it because one, you don't need a phone number. And, you know, two, that person most likely already has a Facebook. So, I mean, it's literally the phone book of the internet.
Right. And essentially when it's almost the third largest country in the world, basically.
Exactly. But I think, you know, we may see a crypto Facebook that's doing the exact same thing as Facebook, but is, you know, secured by the blockchain. You manage your data. You know, we're really just one big scandal away and one good scalable blockchain away from having decentralized social media. I mean, look at Steemit. Steemit is, you know, number two in terms of transactions. I think it's number two. It's either BitShares and Steemit. It's the top two. It's the top two blockchain in terms of transactions per day. And it's a decentralized sort of social media site where you can post sort of like Reddit, but get paid for your content.
Right. And it's very interesting you bring that up too, because Facebook was even having talks of potentially coming out with its own ICO and then having its own coin on there too, which it could make a ton of sense with just going on there to use some of its functionalities and just using their currency. Like there are practicalities to implement it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if you look at Facebook or Amazon, Facebook and Amazon, they're already facilitating, you know, billions of dollars of commerce on their sites. And all they needed, if they introduced, you know, if Facebook, I mean, Amazon's already doing it. Amazon's sort of like one of the biggest financial service providers in the world. And Facebook, all they need is their own crypto or, you know, allow people to store funds on their, you know, sort of become like a Venmo type transfer system. And it already becomes one of the largest used financial apps in the world just because of their user base. So, I mean, Facebook to come out with a coin, it makes sense. But, you know, due to some recent PR, due to the recent, you know, they took a hit to their image. So for them to release a coin, it almost seems like something out of Mr. Robot with his E Corp and stuff. So it's like,
good comparison. That's interesting.
They were in a better footing, you know, prior to last year.
Right. So stemming into another direction with this conversation, wanted to ask you, what is something you are excited about within the cryptocurrency horizon that's coming up relatively soon or is in the near future?
That's a good question. Something that I think is, you know, that excites me about crypto now is sort of into the future is the ability to bank the unbanked. That's really why I got into it. You know, I saw this 2.5 billion people with no bank accounts, but, you know, most of them can get a smartphone. You know, smartphones are so cheap that, you know, most people have access to the internet or some SMS where they can sort of store accounts, store money on that. And I thought that was super exciting. If you could bring these people into the financial markets, you can start giving them loans and, you know, sort of they can, it will unlock a lot of capital and, entrepreneurship in the developing world. But going forward, I really want to see, eventually all transactions that happen that are important that need to be on the blockchain or that could be on the blockchain will probably end up on a blockchain. But there's several issues that we need to solve, and that's, you know, privacy, scalability, and decentralization. My vision of the future is sort of having all transactions on the blockchain so that we know when I send you an email, that email will arrive to you. It won't be tampered. There's no one scanning our emails, you know, collecting our data. There's no way that someone can stop me from paying you or stop me from doing whatever I would like to do on the internet or watch me do whatever I'm doing on the internet. But have a system in such a way where it keeps people from doing illegal things because it's baked into the system itself, right? You can bake these rules into the protocol layer, into these sort of interactions. And that's what I think will happen. Everything that we use will be secured, not necessarily in a chain of blocks, but in some derivative of the technology that allows you to, that provides the same benefits as the blockchains we see today.
Awesome. Huh. Well, Jacob, we just want to say thank you real quick for coming on and taking the time to answer some of these questions. And quickly, as we transition out of here, is there a final thought in addition to what you have just finished saying that you would like to leave with our viewers today?
Yeah. So I would say, guys, keep a lookout on the Ethereum upgrade to hybrid proof of stake and sharding. I think that's going to be one of the largest transitions, economic transitions for a blockchain in history, right? Because they're going from a proof of work model to a proof of stake model. And how they handle that will be very interesting going forward. And for guys who are skeptical on the crypto, whether or not they get in or, you know, is it a bubble, is it a fad, just think about it like this. It's a very asymmetric trade. And by that, I mean that, you know, you can put your capital in and your downside is 1x. You know, you lose all your capital. But the upside is, you know, 10, 100, you know, 1,000x. There's a huge amount of potential in this space. And that's why you see a lot of speculators, because there is so much potential to speculate about. And that's why, you know, look at it as sort of asymmetric trade. If you made this bet 1,000 times, you know, what would be the result? And then just, you know, if you're interested in the space, just invest in your education. That's the best way to keep up with the space. And, you know, as long as you are investing in educating yourself and acquiring more knowledge about this technology, you'll be in a better position in the future. Whether or not this technology is still around doesn't matter, because if you educate yourself on the technology and the problems that it's solving, and a new technology comes along that can solve those problems better, then you already know the problem in detail. So you can easily just shift to that new technology and, you know, continue to solve the problem that you were already working on in the first place. So that's sort of my hot take on the crypto market. I hope it wasn't too, you know, staccato or very...
No, this has been absolutely incredible. We really appreciate your time. We thank you for coming on the show today. Thank you for dropping this incredible, valuable knowledge to our listeners. Again, this is Jacob Pouncey with Saxo Bank. Thank you so much, Adam.
Again, yeah, thank you, Jacob. Thanks for coming out. And
Thank you.
Thanks for listening.
Yeah, but just closing thought. I want to say this because for compliance sake, but you know, everything I said was not financial advice, and you know, definitely everything was my opinion. So
definitely, you know, full disclosure.
That's obligatory.
Absolutely. Yeah, this is not financial advice. This is Jacob coming on and just giving his opinion. So again, thank you so much. And thank you to all listeners that tuned in.
See you guys next week.
Yeah, thank you guys.
Thank you. Hey everyone, thanks again for tuning in. Just a couple of reminders. Please check out our newsletter that goes out every single day, powered by artificial intelligence, that gives you the latest news in cryptocurrency. Also, we are having our CryptoCurrent conference. It is coming in New Orleans. Make sure you are going on our website, checking that out, signing up for some of our pre-sale tickets. Check it out. It's going to be amazing. Start planning for it. It's awesome. And most importantly, go check out our community. If you go on our website, crypto-current.co, you will be able to click on the tab called Our Community. It is a Facebook group. People can go on there and say whatever is on your mind. If you have any questions, it is a great space for you to go and learn as much as possible, but also having a way to communicate with everyone engaged within our community. Again, thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you next week.
So this has been another episode of CryptoCurrent, bringing you one step closer to becoming a crypto and blockchain aficionado. We look forward to giving you the latest in crypto news and analysis next week. Stay CryptoCurrent.
Please use available exits now.